Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Well, December's almost upon us, and around the country, ballet companies are all gearing up for their annual holiday productions of The Nutcracker. Here in Tulsa, it's no different. That will start next week. My guest today is one dancer happy to be performing anything this year. My guest today has written a vivid account of his life as a dancer, of the day-to-day work involved, and how injury and recovery can affect a dancer's life. David Hallberg is considered one of the premier male dancers in all of the world. He's been a principal dancer with American Ballet Theatre in New York for over a decade and was the first American principal ever with the famed Bolshoi Ballet in Moscow. This past May, he returned to the stage in Lincoln Center after a devastating foot injury, which kept him off stage for over 2.5 years. He was afraid he would never, ever dance again. He writes about his life in dance, but more importantly about creativity, the discipline, self-doubt, inspiration, and search for perfection that goes along with being an artist, in his memoir, A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back. David Hallberg joins me today on Studio Tulsa. David Hallberg, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure to be on the show. Thank you so much.
What I appreciated most about your memoir is your honesty and talking about all the thinking that goes along with being a performing artist, and it's oftentimes the little voices that really get in the way of keeping you from performing at your absolute peak. It seems like you talk about that a lot in the memoir. Was that sort of a central part of the book to get across to non-dance audiences?
Absolutely. I made the decision early on that I had to be as honest as possible in the book with my message and with how life is off the stage as an artist. And it's those voices that I think are an imperative part to performing. You know, there's extreme highs to performing, but there's also extreme anxiety and doubt and fear and self-consciousness. And so I really wanted to portray a message that although everything is beautiful at the ballet, internally there's a whole active dialogue going on as a performer.
I was just thinking about one section. It's about debuting a role in a new place, say at the Bolshoi, or maybe some of the first roles you took at ABT, and talking about all the sort of thinking that goes in. Am I going to be setting up right with my partner? And really, when you describe some of the most, I would say, sublime dancing of your life, it's when all that thinking went out of your head.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly, I read about that definitely in the book, but about 2 weeks ago, I revisited a role that I had done before my injury, and I went on stage, and I felt so fearless almost, so in the moment and present that I felt no doubt. And although I was, of course, honing in on what I had rehearsed and what I had practiced, but it was such a beautiful feeling, and that's what I have felt before, and what I've written in the book is this feeling of letting everything go and just relying on the work that you've put on beforehand and just enjoying the moment of being on stage.
You begin the book by writing about ballet class, and I think for most non-dancers, we think of this sort of as a necessary warm-up, somewhat like an athlete would do calisthenics. But you describe something very, very different.
Mm. As a ballet dancer, we have at the very least, an hour of class a day. At ABT, we have an hour and a half. And it's with that time that we keep honing in on our technique. If we don't have daily class in the morning, our technique slips. And I write about that in the book. I say, a famous ballerina once said, if you take one day off, only you know. If you take 2 days off, your coach knows. If you take 3 days off, your audience knows.
The same is said in music, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Rich, it's so true. If I don't hone in on my craft almost every day, it just starts to slip.
It's unlike a warm-up of sorts. You're really working on the movements in their most elemental and precise form.
Yes. A lot of people have asked me, don't you have it right yet? You know, why do you have to keep going to class? And the thing is, it's true. We do the same tendu every day. A tendu is just a stretch of the foot outward. And we can always find ways to perfect that tondu. And I actually speak about that in my book. I speak about the tondu and how to perfect the tondu, how to perfect something that you've been doing, the same step you've been doing since you were 8, and actually a non-dancer could execute.
What I found, it was interesting, there's a movement called a menage, and this is a series of leaps in a circular motion around the stage in which you sort of do the splits, if you will. I mean, I'm saying it very unartfully, but that's basically, there's more nuance to it, but it's a series of jumps around the stage. And you said it took you years, even after you were a principal dancer and you were expected to do that, before you really felt like you could do it as well as you should be doing it as a principal dancer.
So true. Sometimes there are steps that plague you your entire career. And I have to say, the menage is one of them for me. I really struggled with it. I mean, I could do it, but it just wasn't up to my liking, and it wasn't up to my coach's liking. And it just took so many years, so many ways of analyzing, so many ways of approaching it, that it wasn't just one day a magic thing fixed it all. It was through all of those years that just slowly the step got better and better.
You write very honestly about your early life. You had great parents, but you were teased an awful lot in school, and really dance was the outlet. Tell us about your first main teacher, Mr. Hahn, in Arizona.
Mr. Hahn was an integral part of my training as a dancer. I had no idea what good training or poor training was, but Mr. Hahn, again, the stars aligned, and he was in Phoenix when I was looking to train, and he was running a ballet school there, and we just dove in head first, and he realized, I think, my potential early on, but it was very raw, my potential. Nothing was formed, nothing was shaped, and he spent 4 years, 6 days a week, perfecting that with me, and my parents, with credit to them, completely instilled the utmost trust in what he was, how he was training me. And it was so important. I mean, he not only drilled me like a drill sergeant, but he also taught me the benefits of hard work and dedication and focus. And I've carried that with me my entire career.
You know, when I talk to a lot of teachers of the arts, they talk about how it's really difficult to have incredibly high standards, because a lot of times they feel like they have to give a lot of praise. Mr. Hahn did not give praise. And I'm wondering what it is about your makeup that made you really accept that, and the idea that doing something well was maybe going to get a nod, if that. And it was mainly about what you didn't do right all the time.
I can't describe why I craved that sort of non-positive reinforcement. I think I was just hungry, and without having to find an answer, I knew that this artistic and physical hunger was satiated through Mr. Hahn's teaching. And he never said, and nor did I have any comparison on how good I was, or maybe how much talent I had, quote unquote. I just listened to what he said, and what he said was, you know, pick up the passe higher, or plie longer, or again, 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 again. And he would just, it was this like kind of drilling of steps and throughout the course of time that I ate it up. I absorbed it like a sponge.
When you were 18, you'd done some work with some of the summer programs with American Ballet Theater, but you decided to go to Paris and spend your senior year at the Paris Opera School. And this was, I guess, Mr. Hahn was great preparation, because basically you were going into the Paris Opera School at the point where these young dancers are about ready to either find out if they're going to be joining the Paris Opera Company or not. And you describe a miserable year abroad.
Absolutely. I went as a very naive American. I wanted to be best friends with everyone in a day, and they really repelled from that. And I spent the entirety of the year just spending time alone and being pushed in the back of the studio and sort of ignored. And I was bullied a bit and teased. People really didn't like me. But I have to say, at the end of the year, because I didn't give up, I had learned so much about myself. I had learned, without being conscious of it, as a 17-year-old, I had learned resilience. I had learned, focus. I had learned that I'm not afraid to be alone. I'm not afraid to spend time alone. Those were integral lessons that I learned in a true coming-of-age moment.
You describe in the book working with a dancing partner, dancers you've had tremendous rapport with, Natalia Osipov, Svetlana Sakharova. But you also describe what it's like when you don't have a partner in which you have any rapport with. There's a dancer known as Michelle that appears in the book, and you work with this dancer for 3 or 4 years. And you describe what it was like not having any rapport. What is that feeling like when you do and when you don't?
Well, when you don't, it turns into business as usual. At times it's explosive. It was never very explosive with Michelle, but, it can be. I've heard stories of other people not getting along. But then when you find a partner that you really work with and you mesh well, it's magical. I mean, for fear of using an overused word, it's magical. It's it creates this higher purpose of why we portray art, why we are artists, and who we can really connect with our art. And that isn't just me and my partner, Natasha. It's me, my partner, Natasha, and the audience.
My guest today is David Hallberg, a principal dancer with American Ballet Theater. He was the first American to be a principal dancer with the Bolshoi Ballet. He's one of the top dancers in the world. Suffered an injury in his foot and ankle that led him to be off for almost 2 years before coming back. And his new memoir is titled A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. You were very much steeped in ABT, American Ballet Theater, which is, again, classical ballet. You've danced at the Bolshoi. But there was a time in your life when you felt like you were getting bored with the classical repertoire. You were heading downtown and learning about all sorts of different types of dance and almost being matter-of-fact about dancing the classical repertoire. But it seems like something happened, and all of a sudden you got a new level of understanding. Can you explain what that new level of understanding was of the classical roles?
Yeah, I really attribute it to maturity. I feel like I went through my kind of too cool for school phase. And, everyone kind of goes through that at one point in their lives. But as dancers, we're forced to grow up so quickly. When we're 25, we've already lived alone and had a career for at least 6 years, 7 years. And I feel like it was actually around 25 that I was sort of, just a little not so interested in what I was doing. And I wanted to explore things or reject things. I'll never forget, and I write about this in the book, I was speaking to a modern choreographer who's created work on American Ballet Theater. He said, "What's your next show? And what's your next performance?" And I said, "Oh, just another Swan Lake." And he didn't skip a beat. And he said, "Don't ever undermine your art form. The modern world that you see performances of is just as valid as your world, and vice versa." And it was so true. And then it just took maturity for me to find that commitment again to the timeless roles that I portray. And also, of course, to search for new work. But, there's a reason why Swan Lake has stood the test of time. And I'm honored to have been a part of that history.
By the way, that was Lars Lubavitch, who's done some work here in our area as well. So we would know who that was.
Mm-hmm, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. At some point, you'd been going over to Russia and dancing, and you found a great coach at the Mariinsky Theater in St. Petersburg. But were you surprised by Sergei Filin's offer to join the Bolshoi?
Absolutely. I wasn't expecting it. I didn't think it was possible. And Sergei opened so many doors for me. He believed in how I was, how I danced as an artist, and he wanted to give me these kinds of opportunities. But I was shocked at the offer. you know, Bolshoi in the dance world seemed was so closed off. It was all Russians and basically no foreigners, and certainly no foreigners in their top ranking. And I was shocked, but I quickly realized that the offer that was being made was an offer that was such a risk. It was so, the calling was almost higher than myself. It was like, I have to do this. This is my responsibility. And I'm so glad I did. It just opened my eyes to so much.
What did you learn about yourself and your dancing from being a part of the Bolshoi?
Well, the approach to technique, logistically speaking, is very different. You know, the movement is bigger, it's more open and external. And that really went against who I was naturally as a dancer. I was kind of a different style of dancer. And so I was really taking myself out of my comfort zone and relying on a coach I found there to teach me almost a new way of moving. And it was so fascinating.
Of course, you were there when Sergei Filin was attacked. He was attacked outside of his apartment. And I think that made international headlines. It's like, you know, what the heck is going on at the Bolshoi? I mean, is that, you know, somebody would attack him, and it was like he was attacked with acid, and, you know, he very narrowly escaped blindness. Did you get a sense of that sense of commitment to the Bolshoi from people within the company and without?
Yeah, you know, when that incident happened, which is obviously so unbelievably shocking and tragic, the company of Bolshoi Theater, all 3,000 employees, really banded together. And it showed such a symbol of solidarity to the press and to audiences. And, you know, Russia, of course, is controversial in a way that they sometimes handle situations much differently than we would in America. But apart from that, Bolshoi, after that attack, came together and really showed the world that the dancers and the staff were so unbelievably shocked at the turn of events and supported Sergei in every capacity imaginable.
Now, as a member of the Bolshoi, we think of them as being sort of rock stars in Russia, from what you hear, you know, poets and ballet dancers as being sort of rock stars in a way. But it was interesting that you did have a bit of an anonymity, because most average Russians have never been able to afford to go to the Bolshoi.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bolshoi during the communist days was this kind of precious gem. And it was always, whether or not you had been to Bolshoi Theater, you always you aspire to go to Bolshoi Theater. And what was interesting now is, you know, although it's a different country and Perestroika happened, of course, I have given tickets to my performances at Bolshoi to people working at the Russian sauna, or, you know, friends of mine who I knew never had been to Bolshoi Theater. And it's almost as if they've gotten the golden ticket in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It's like they are so honored and so deeply touched that they are being afforded the opportunity to go to Bolshoi Theater. And it's so amazing to witness the influence and the respect that people have for ballet and for Bolshoi Theater.
My guest today is David Hallberg, a principal dancer with American Ballet Theater. He was the first American to be a principal dancer with the Bolshoi Ballet. He's written a memoir titled A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back. Now, the last part of the book covers your injury, which involved a couple of surgeries and about 16 months of not being able to dance. Did you write this book while you were rehabbing, or was that afterwards, or what exactly? Because there are certain times where there are portions of the book where he says, I don't know if I'll ever dance again.
Yeah, I was writing the book while I was in my rehabilitation. And it really... it really became a sort of outlet in a way that I could express what I was going through. I didn't write it in real time. I didn't experience rehab one day and go home and write about it. But I I wrote about it a couple of months in retrospect, and it served as such a kind of cathartic way of moving on and realizing not only what I had been through, the events that I had been through, but the progress that I was making, especially in Australia when I went to rehab there. And that became the true message of the book. You know, it really became the message that I wanted to portray to the reader that, you know, it took every ounce of me. It took all of my guts and determination and grit and focus to make the decision and to conquer this injury that plagued me for 2.5 years.
You describe when you got finished with the season right before you had the first surgery. You said, you know, I took a road trip and I was walking around. It says, as a pedestrian, I had no pain. I could have walked away. And you really thought about that for a while. Should I retire or should I go through the rehab and try to dance again? And you decided to do the surgeries in the rehab. And I guess the first surgery didn't take, and you had to do a second surgery. And then your rehab involved learning a completely new way of moving your body to dance correctly for your feet and your ankles, correct?
Correct, yes. And that's something that the Australian Ballet Rehabilitation Team did so successfully. They completely rejigged my instrument, and they instilled a new way of working and a new way of supporting my instrument. And, you know, after the fact, I feel so much stronger. I feel so much more in control. I feel so much more grounded. And I have to say, they absolutely changed me for the better. My instrument is more resilient. It's more, you know, it's able to take the shock of, you know, jumping and turning and torsion because of how I condition my body now.
You write at one point, you said, you know, I was a natural dancer. I started late. And was it a fact that because you were a natural dancer, you sort of had some innately bad habits of how you did basic movements ergonomically, if you will?
It's an interesting question. And I wouldn't necessarily call them bad habits, but I would say that the habits that I developed were natural habits. And as an example, when I would dance, my feet would roll in because I had such mobility in my feet that I was able to reach a certain pronation and a certain angle of my feet that most people can't reach because of how flexible I am. But that's how you suffer injury as well, because the more mobility you have, the more you are susceptible to, you know, sprains and breaks and injury. And so it was those kinds of habits that I just did. I did naturally. And of course, I learned through injury that I now know how to support the system. I know how to not go to my extremities, not go to the absolute limit.
How difficult was it to relearn how to dance, basically?
It was probably one of the most difficult internal dialogues I have ever had in my entire life, because I was in the studio with someone who wanted to help me, with someone in Australia, her name's Megan Connolly, someone who wanted to get me back from this injury, and my ego, if you will, was saying, well, I know how to dance. I've danced professionally for 15 years. I've been celebrated as the dancer I am. Why do I need to learn to do this differently? And I knew why, but I think instinctually my body and mind rejected it at the beginning because I didn't want to relearn a technique that I had honed in for 15 years.
Did you ever think there was a day during that rehab that you wouldn't dance again?
It's funny. It's a good question, because there wasn't a day where I wanted to throw in the towel. There was a day that I the majority of the days were filled with, I don't know if I will ever dance again. I don't know if I will ever be able to dance, to be on the stage. And I could look back on the progress that I had made through, you know, however many months I had already been there. But I knew that I still needed to do more to be able to perform. And like, yes, I just did one turn, but I have to do five turns, you know, or I just did a single cabriole, but I have to do a double cabriole landing on one foot. I always saw the stuff that I hadn't yet accomplished.
Hmm. Eventually, you went back to the stage. Did you actually go back to the stage in Melbourne first, or did you come back to New York?
I got back on stage with the Australian Ballet, and then my big return was in New York City at ABT in Giselle.
What was that experience like?
I feel like New York just totally re-embraced me. I felt like I'll never forget running on stage after the first entrance, and the audience just absolutely, I felt this warm rush of support coming from you know, an audience of 4,000 people. And it was so surreal. I felt so calm and ready and open and accepting, and it was such a beautiful, beautiful moment to return to.
You say that you're indebted to Australian Ballet. In fact, you're a resident guest artist with them and go back, I guess, every year. Is that the plan?
That is the plan. I leave. I go to Sydney next week. I'm going to dance the Sleeping Beauty with them in Sydney. And it's really, I love that company. They're such a beautiful company. It's 90 dancers. It's a fabulous company down there. So it's really become home.
Mm. Well, it's a really amazing story in which you talk about the mindset of a performing artist, and especially a performing artist in which you have a limited time. You know, the body does eventually break down. Are you feeling good about continuing to dance for the next few years?
I am. I feel even better than before, to be honest. I feel more more secure, more grateful. It really was the experience. Couldn't have had a better outcome.
All right. We wish you great success. The name of the book is A Body of Work. David, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
David Hallberg speaking with us here on Studio Tulsi. He's currently a principal dancer with American Ballet Theatre and continues to dance as a resident guest artist with the Australian Ballet, where he has been dancing this past week. His new book is titled A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back. It's published by Touchstone. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.